Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. CBS is back in the medical drama universe with Good Sam, co-starring Sophia Bush and Jason Isaacs. Here, executive producers Katie Wetz, Jenny Snyder-Ehrman, and Joanna Klein when they join me next in the internet radio exclusive from Los Angeles. Also back, Dirty Jobs, Discovery Channel's long-running salute to hardworking people, hosted by Mike Rowe. Our next half hour brings together executive producers Ben Franzen and Josh Berkeley. Unchained TV is the new spot on the TV spectrum for all things vegan and plant-based. We'll start today's second hour with Unchained TV founder Jane Bellis Mitchell. And batting last and certainly nowhere least, American Ninja Warrior executive producer Brian Richardson and contestant Anthony Trucks. Also ahead, Sidney Poitier remembered for his TV work and more. CES 2022 wraps, Fallout arrives at Amazon, our classic trivia question, and Women of the Movement, ABC's new miniseries, is our first 2022 show to know. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Verbal, and Reason. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in our program. A happy Friday afternoon to you and you and especially you, and welcome to a special two-hour edition of the program about TV's current and future, our second episode of this new year. 33 degrees at the top of the hour. The storm that we had with the snow already gone by us. Went by around noon, and we have about 3 to 5 inches in the New York metro area. I hope you, if you were in the path of the storm, you weathered as best as possible, and we're happy you're with us this afternoon. We have a great guest lineup for you over the next 2 hours, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and call in. The number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. Shy about the phone, no problem. Use our chat room. Get into it now. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Our trio of executive producers from Good Sam, join us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. Sidney Poitier, the trail-shattering actor who became an iconic movie star from the 1950s to 1970s, passed away this morning. Television gave Poitier a new platform as an actor during the 1990s, appearing in a series of made-for-TV movies and miniseries. In one of his first TV roles, Poitier played Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall in the Emmy-winning miniseries Separate But Equal. Other TV projects include a sequel to his 1967 movie hit, The Sir with Love, and a remake of another 1960s film, David and Lisa. Sidney Poitier was 94. CES 2022, the annual Consumer Electronics Show, is in its final hours at Las Vegas at this hour. Estimates from a number of sources suggest between 40,000 and 60,000 people came to CES this week, compared to more than 180,000 for the last in-person Vegas edition 2 years ago. And the creative squad behind HBO's Westworld, led by Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, husband and wife team, appear ready to go with their first Amazon TV affair. The project is Fallout, adapted from a set of popular video games dealing with the aftermath of nuclear war in the United States in 2077. Showrunners have been signed, and Nolan will direct the opening episode. Production is expected to begin by spring. In other Amazon development, season 3 of the Emmy-nominated The Boys is earmarked to premiere on June 3rd. And that is news notes for today. As long as broadcast network television has been around, the medical drama has been around. Think of all the iconic medical series that have been happening throughout the decades. Shows like Medic, Ben Casey, Dr. Goldare, Medical Center, Marcus Welby, MD, ER, and more recently shows like Grey's Anatomy, House, and The Resident. Well, CBS on Wednesday night brought another medical drama into the picture, a show called Good Sam, co-starring Sophia Bush and Jason Isaacs. We have three, not one, not two, but three of the executive producers joining us live from Los Angeles in internet radio exclusive, and they are Katie Wetz, Jenny Snyder-Ehrman, and Joanna Klein. All three of you, Happy New Year. Welcome to our program.
Hi, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
It is great to have all of you aboard. And, Katie, I'll start with you. You and your colleagues have had about 48 hours to get the reaction of the show. What's been the reaction to Good Sam since it premiered Wednesday night?
Oh, it's been so rewarding to see how well it's been received. You know, I think this is a show that we are excited about because we feel like it has all the things that we want in a show that we would watch, and it feels like that's the feedback that we're getting, that it's soapy and there's relationship, you know, stuff to sink your teeth into, but there's also juicy medical mysteries and that kind of procedural drama that, you know, CBS, you can rely on CBS to deliver. And I just think that it came across loud and clear to the audience, and they have been really, like, received it with open arms. It's very gratifying.
Jenny, what brought all of you together to do this drama?
You know, I was lucky enough to have Katie on Jane the Virgin, and just she's such an extraordinary writer with such a great hand for comedy and drama. And so in my heart, I was just like, when can I participate in her show? And Katie and I had a dinner, and we talked about medical shows and why we loved them. And this was after Jane Rapp. And, you know, we just talked about ideas, and then Katie went to work, and here we are today.
Joanna, picking up on that theme, why do people love medical dramas? And sort of extending the theme, how does Good Sam play into this incredible lineup of classic shows? Joanna, are you there?
Joanna?
Oh, sorry. Hi. Two-part question. Sorry about that. I think that the reason why people are drawn to medical shows are a few reasons. One is the high stakes. I mean, it's really, a live-or-die situation, and people like watching medical professionals, our heroes, taking care of the patients. They also like the mystery of the doctors finding out what's really happening and getting to the heart of things, no pun intended. And then your second question, why is this, how is this different? I mean, we see this show as being really unique in that it combines a family drama with a medical franchise. So it's a father and daughter at the center, and then, the mother as the third leg of the triangle running the hospital. And we haven't really seen that before in a medical drama. In addition to that, there's all the soapy character drama. So it's sort of a lot of things in one, and we think there's sort of something for everyone.
Hmm. Katie, what inspired the idea of Good Sam, and particularly the idea of starting off with a father-daughter situation where the father is the head of the hospital, or at least head of the particular arena of medicine that that the daughter, played by Sophia Dutt, is involved with. And then you flip it around where, because of this coma, the roles are reversed to a degree.
Yes, exactly. The roles are reversed. That was the compelling idea, I think, to me, is just the thought experiment of what it would be like to be my dad's boss. So I think that was a fun jumping off point for me, and I think it's a story about growing up and becoming your own person and how you define that for yourself, especially vis-a-vis your parents. And in our show, in fact, the main character, Sophia Bush's character, has both her father and her mother working in the hospital, so she has to navigate how to step out from her father's very, you know, imposing shadow and find her own path and find out whether she can be a person in power and be the kind of leader that she wants to be. Following that journey felt very contemporary and relatable to me, and doing it inside of a hospital and telling a medical story is exciting for all the reasons that Joanna said. Particularly the idea of female heart surgeons was interesting to me. I don't know if you know that, like, less than 5% of heart surgeons in our country are women. And it's just true in general that even though it's 2022 and that women now outnumber men in medical school, starting in medical school today, some specialties, particularly ones like cardiothoracic surgery, still have this wildly lopsided gender mix. So I'm interested in the point of view of a woman inside of that kind of a system. Even today, when a hospital hires a woman heart surgeon, it's often a first.
We're talking with three of the key executive producers behind the new CBS medical drama, Good Samus, on Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time near local CBS station. And they are Katie Wetch, Jenny Snyder-Ehrman, and Joanna Klein, all with us live from L.A. this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Hamon with you live from the other side of the U.S. of A., New York, where it's we still have the remnants of the snow. It's melting really fast, thanks to all those salt stuff going around from everybody here in the New York metro area. 33 degrees at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for our guest? Don't be shy. Make that phone go, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our first three-episode week of this year will be next week, Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, all at this very hour, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Coming up on Monday, we'll introduce you to two production companies that have got big plans for this year. The first is Boat Rocker Media. They've done all sorts of shows, including a show that premiered, I believe, earlier this week, its second season on TBS, The Go Big Show. We'll talk to the co-executive chairman behind this fast-growing company, David Fortier and Ivan Sheenberg. And then we'll talk to Chicken Soup of the Soul Entertainment, the folks behind the popular mega content service Crackle, an ad-supported service available on smart TV sets and smart devices, which started late last year. And they've got some production companies that they are trying to crank out some very exciting new shows. We'll talk to the president of Crackle Plus, who's very much involved in the parent Chicken Soup, Philip A. Goulton. That's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Joanna, when you take a plot like this with your fellow executive producers, how do you shape it? How long does it take to sort of figure out the Bible of where does the show go from the opening episode, from the basic plot of father-daughter reverse relationships?
Oh, gosh, I love that you're giving me this question. This is really more of a question for Katie and Jenny. I'm lucky enough to be by their side and as they're shaping it. But really, you know, it starts from the center and it builds out from there. You know, the center of our show is the father-daughter relationship. One of the things that we've loved is hearing the description of it feels like it's Succession meets House meets This Is Us. So keeping that in mind, it feels like once you start from that center, you build out all of the intriguing relationships from there as you plot the season. We sort of like to have a general sense of where we're going to end the season, and then, you know, we fill in from there. But that's really Katie and Jenny's masterful work behind.
Mm-hmm. Katie, given what you were talking about before, you and your fellow students talked about, which is the fact that you want to empower more women to get involved into the heart side of the medical profession. Did that impact, A, how you wrote the opening episode on Wednesday and the idea of how you take the story, but also in terms of who you cast in the main role of the daughter, played by Sophia Bush, who we know from Chicago PD and other shows?
I think it's such a lovely and perfect combination of circumstances that let this show be born at this moment when Sophia was available and interested to do it, because I truly can't think of someone better to bring our good Sam to life. She just really radiates the spirit of what the character of Sam embodies and what's the essence of the show, the heart of the show, the pun we can never avoid, as Joanna said before, that at her core, she is an optimistic person, a hopeful person, someone who believes every day she gets up out of bed and thinks, what can she do to make the world just a little bit better? And what I love about this character is that she's sort of a love letter to the healthcare workers in our country at this moment, and the heroes on the front line of this war that we're all fighting, and that we all can feel that there is hope on the horizon and a better day, and that science works because of people fighting that fight, because of the people, the real people doing that work. And so Sophia is very excited about the idea of getting to play a character that really kind of wraps her arms around that whole idea and really the spirit of that. And so, yeah, I think absolutely that's something that we celebrate. And this show is a hopeful show, and it is a hospital that feels like a place where miracles happen every day, and a hospital that you want to be in and live in, and people you want to be with at the end of your day, even at this moment in time when we certainly all don't have to look far for dramatic medical stories in our own lives, in fact.
And Jenny, when it comes to the father side of the equation, what were you looking for in terms of an actor to fit that bill, and how does Jason fit that bill?
We were looking for Jason, and he said yes, so lucky, lucky us. You know, it just somebody who is what he brings is this, you know, he's able to dig into all of the reality of the relationship and the character, while also like us understanding what's underneath it and what he's fighting against all the time, the limitations of his own experiences and of his you know, relationship with his daughter and how much he's missed. We can feel all the levels of, you know, what he wants, what he's not capable of, what he's threatened by, and eventually what, you know, what breaks through that. And I think he's just somebody that, you know, in these micro expressions, you read the world. And so how lucky to have an actor like that. And the two of them together is just, to us, so where the magic happens and where you get to really look at, you know, relationships and leadership styles and gender and generations and all of that, and looking at it through the prism of a father-daughter relationship just feels both personal and political at once, which is always a good place to be in, I think.
Mm-hmm. Joanna, did you and your fellow producers give both Sophia and Jason any ground rules in terms of how you want the chemistry to develop from point A to point B to point C?
Well, I mean, I can, they have a natural chemistry. You know, Jason has two daughters of his own, and so he has a lot to draw from. And it's funny because, you know, as tough as Jason is, or Jason's character is on Sam, Sophia's character, it's kind of hard for him to play that in a way, because he is just like, do I have to be so mean? Because he's really the kindest, loveliest, most charming man. But somehow that chemistry really works. It's pulled through in the characters, where we know that they love each other deep down, but they're just both two brilliant, strong characters who are so confident, and they just butt heads. And that's what's so fun and juicy to watch.
Mm-hmm. Now, Katie, the best medical dramas from Medic On try to bring different types of either social issues or ethical medical issues into the fore, or they try to showcase new developments in medical technology, as, for example, the Bold Ones did with their new the new medicine segments that were headed by Ishi Marshall and the late David Hartman, John Saxon, and their crew. Were there certain social issues or ethical issues or medical issues, aside from the whole idea of women being more part of the heart surgery force, that you want to tackle, at least in this first season?
Well, every episode and every medical case that we explore gives us an opportunity to do just that. In fact, we look at the frontier of medicine and the ideas and implications around gene therapy and genetic editing. We are talking about, you know, every patient that comes in has a point of view or a perspective on their condition or the circumstances that led to their condition that can let you dive into things that can be political in nature or contemporary, at least with regard to the news and sort of what we're plugged into at any given moment. So that's the exciting thing about having a case of the week, episodic mysteries to solve in our medical stories, that we can, it's a really a bottomless well of stories like that.
What do Katie West, Jenny Snyder-Ehrman, and Joanna Klein-Hall have in common? They are executive producers of the new CBS medical drama Good Sam, starring Sophia Bush and Jason Isaacs. It's on Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local CBS station. And they're all with us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On tomorrow, we'll be televised. Some of them with you live from New York. Live, you're with us on this Friday afternoon, wrapping up the first full week of 2022. And if you have a question or a comment for our remaining time with our guests, give us a call, 646-652-2906. or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Tuesday on Tomorrow Be Televised, it's at our regular time. It's our special edition next week. You'll meet somebody who you probably have known as a face on all sorts of television shows in episodic TV land. His name is Arayan Morales, and he is the creator, writer, director of Topic's popular new series, The Accidental Wolf, starring Tony Award-winning musical actress Kelly O'Hara. He'll be with us live on Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And coming up a week from today, we'll have the creators and executive producers of the brand-new HBO comedy Somebody Somewhere, premiering next weekend, Hannah Boss and Paul Thareen. Plus, you'll meet a interesting person who last year put together a film called Hollywood Priest. It's about one of the most amazing executive producers in TV history, Father Elwood Kaiser, the Paul's father behind the award-winning religious drama series Insight. Father Tom Gibbons, the producer, writer, director of Hollywood Priest, which was screened at several festivals last year, coming to more theaters this year. He'll be with us live Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Jenny, or any one of you three, all of you are not just executive producers on the show. You're also mentors because both Sophia and Jason are also producers. And I believe it's for the first time in their careers on a television series. What's it been like, in addition to doing your work, mentoring Sophia and Jason in their roles as producers?
You know, I don't
Go, Jenny.
I was saying the same thing as you, Katie. You take it.
Just, I don't know that I would use that word. I feel every day that I learn something from Sophia and Jason. I think we have a real partnership with them. You know, the making a television show is such a collective effort, and we really have to do it together. And I have, and Jenny has the experience that we have coming in as the producers and the writers of the show, that I do not know what it is like to stand there on that set for the hours of the day that Sophia and Jason do, throwing themselves into actually putting it on film and bringing it to life. And so I think we share with each other the demands and specifics of what this job takes and what this show requires, and we build together in, it just feels like a phalanx of people who have closed ranks around the idea of this show and wanting it to win, and it just feels that we are all moving in one direction together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's the key thing for them to learn as producers? And is it one of them to know when you have to turn on your producer hat, particularly when you're acting, or turn it off, you know, to sort of separate the acting side, the role I'm playing from, you know, I'm part of managing the whole process? And
you know, I think they just naturally do that, honestly, because actors have to. They have to constantly pivot on stage, and the amount of time and hours that, you know, those two have spent on stage and in shows, they know already what it takes. So, you know, the beauty is that you have, everyone's got a shorthand, and you can set, you know, we can talk about things that are needed on the producer side and also, you know, on the character side. And it's all sort of one conversation. And I think it's, you know, everybody talks and listens to each other. And, you know, we're really lucky to have this really open communication flow. And as Katie said, we're all rowing in the same direction. So, you know, it's all a partnership.
This is for anyone. What's it like for all of you to produce and get out the door a medical drama under the cloud of a medical condition like the coronavirus?
It's a formidable challenge. I think it is why we felt from the beginning that our vision for this show to be a hopeful one was so imperative, because we all feel so much the reality of what this moment is. And we all have been personally affected by this global pandemic that continues to affect so many people's lives, and so many lives have been lost. So the idea that there could be hope on the other side of that for us, an opportunity to tell stories that really put healthcare workers and the brave people who fight that battle for real every day in the spotlight, just it feels like a real privilege and a big responsibility. And we all have so much respect and appreciation for that. So I think that's really a guiding light for us as we represent the characters and the world of this show, and it's never far from our minds.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else have a thought?
I would agree with that, and I would say also, you know, one of the reasons we didn't do COVID on the show, and we had obviously so many conversations about it, but, you know, part of that is the not knowing the ending, right? We don't know when it's going to end, and didn't want to – the biggest thing for us was not wanting to portray anything that was not accurate vis-a-vis the pandemic, and not wanting to – and, you know, not wanting to model – If we did the pandemic, we would have to be exceptional at it and really, you know, have everyone in their masks all the time, you know, and be really diligent about that because that's what's needed right now. And then you can't get to meet new characters on a new show where you're just learning who they are and not see their faces anytime. So that was why we really chose not to do the pandemic, because if we were going to tackle that in a brand new show, we would have to model exceptional guidelines, and that would be so important to us. So, you know, but it is still going on all the time, and you feel it all the time on set, right, with all of the COVID protocols and the testing, and it just sort of gives us this feeling of, like, these doctors every day are so heroic. We all know it, and they're heroic in a pandemic, but they're also heroic in the lives of people every day, prior to the pandemic and after the pandemic, they will be too. And when you're the patient in the hospital, you know, you're looking at these doctors and your life is in their hands. And that's such a powerful thing as a patient. And I'm sure it's so powerful as a doctor too. And we really just want to be mindful of that and respectful of the weight of what that job is.
Mm-hmm. And that is a good, powerful point to complete this conversation on. With one more point, which is that you can catch the second episode of Good Sam, starring Sophia Bush and Jason Isaacs, next Wednesday, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local CBS station. Check your locals where CBS is available in your area. For more details on the program, go to CBS.com. And don't forget, the program will also be streamed on Paramount Plus, which is Viacom CBS's mega content service. More details at ParamountPlus.com for all of that. Once again, Good Sam, episode number 2, next Wednesday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time and Pacific on CBS. Katie West, Jenny Snyder-Ehrman, Joanna Klein, thank all three of you for being with us today, and hopefully what happened Wednesday night is the beginning of a wonderful long run for you and everybody involved.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome, all three of you. Take care and have a sensational weekend.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Katie West, Jenny Snyder-Ehrman, and Joanna Klein joining us live from Los Angeles. On Tomorrow will be televised. More TWBT coming your way, but first some words to the fine folks at Audible.com. Hey, have you heard? There's a brand new Outlander audiobook available for you by its wonderful writer, Diana Gabaldon. It's called Go Tell the Bees That I Am God. How about that for a title? Well, while you wait for Outlander to get its next season on Stars later this year, how about checking out that audiobook? You can with a trial run with Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment information and inspiration. There's over 250,000 titles to choose from. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and our podcast affiliates. Plus, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook, a one-month trial of the service, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and health and wellness information that could make a difference for you and other people around your life. And if you're an Amazon Prime member already, that's two audiobooks you get in your trial for 1 month, and that includes a book from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking about original audio productions and podcast series, Best of Broadway, Off-Broadway, Regional Theater, and great one woman and one man performances. By the way, if you want to go right ahead and subscribe, here's a great deal for you while it lasts. First 3 months, only $5.95 a month. And that saves you a lot off the regular monthly price. So for all details, go to audibletrial.com/televised. We're just getting started on this two-hour edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Coming up in our next half hour, we have our classic trivia question of the week with five prizes in play. But first, Dirty Jobs is back on Discovery Channel, and we've got two of the key executive producers, Ben Franzen from Atlanta, Josh Berkeley from Washington, D.C. They will join us after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. together reaching nearly 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home for Sisters United. Check it out Wednesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to Marvy Televised, coming away live from New Weather York on this Friday afternoon. Simon Applebaum with you live from the Big Apple. Happy to have you with us. 32 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Snow is all done. It's already melting. Clouds are out. Nice blue sky happening too. And we have some wonderful more guests coming your way over the next 90 minutes if you just joined us. So make them available to you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And remember, coming up before the top of the hour, our classic trivia question of the week. You could be the first trivia winner of this new year with five prizes in play going to you if you have the correct answer. This past Sunday night, one of the most popular series in the history of Discovery Channel came back. It's Dirty Jobs. It's a story about hardworking Americans, and Mike Rowe is the host, getting involved, down and dirty. The show came back, and so far it's winning rave reviews for its brand-new episodes. Well, joining us live right now are two of the folks that are making the revival of Dirty Jobs happen. First, calling us from Atlanta, Georgia, executive producer Ben Franzen. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me.
Your pleasure. Very happy to have you. And also joining us from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., fellow executive producer Josh Berkeley. Hello, Josh.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. Ben, what's been the reaction to Dirty Jobs coming back on Discovery?
Boy, it's been, especially on social media, it's been all over the place. You know, people thanking us just for the first two episodes. About, you know, showcasing work that they've never seen before. You know, the last episode was rod-busting and galvanizing, and rod-busting in particular, you don't see it. It's covered up with concrete, but it's our bridges, it's our roads, it's our buildings, and these people are some of the hardest-working, you know, construction workers out there, and so it's really great to celebrate them. Not only them, but all the people that know about them have been writing in and saying just positive things left and right.
Mm-hmm. You know, Josh, this series, when it was on, really became one of the all-time greats for the Discovery Channel. What finally got Discovery and Mike to come back and do new episodes?
Well, you know, I think the timing was strangely just fortuitous. Mike had spent some time away, and he'd always stayed connected with the network, and he was doing voiceover work and other work, so he was still in the family. And we just decided, we were talking, you know, over time and thinking about the show, and he felt that it was, you know, time to start shining the light on essential workers again. This was, you know, kind of pre-pandemic. So I have to say, some of the timing is just kind of remarkable, and it's been you know, this journey for Mike about, you know, showcasing American jobs, and over the last 2 years, you know, essential work and American jobs have been in the headlines for various obvious reasons, and so yeah, we're just very fortunate that collectively Mike was ready to come back and make the show again, and its timing has been, you know, unbelievable.
The original series, Ben, ran from 2005 to 2013, I believe, 8 seasons, and also had a limited series called Road Trip as well. Was it easier or harder to find the subjects for this go-round of episodes?
That's an interesting question because, you know, at its heart, it's always a challenge to find a new job for Mike, but that's also what makes it, you know, a success when you do. And, you know, when you start really looking at, you know, what sort of jobs help support day-to-day life, there's a lot of them out there that most of us don't know about. And between that and all the fan-based submission, there's just no lack of jobs. And honestly, it's a never-ending possibility to make these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, but Simon, I'd like to add something. You know,
you go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, Ben and his team with School of Humans did a fantastic job of looking for the right combination of really dirty, hard jobs. As Mike always says, you know, we shine a light on the folks the dirty work that allows the rest of us to live in a civilized society. But his team and their research did a really great job of finding new, fresh jobs with interesting jobbers. And the challenge is, you know, we've done over 250 some odd jobs on the series. So there are a lot more out there, but I don't want to undersell the hard work that they did in terms of development to get these jobs together and get everybody excited about going out in the field again for this season.
Yeah, and, you know, on that, Simon, I'd like to add one other thing is that one of the things that really helped us was the fact that the whole world is using Zoom right now. You know, we can go meet people in advance. We kind of know what we're getting into. And we, quite honestly, we build relationships before we get there.
Hmm. Speaking of relationships, what qualifies or classifies as a dirty job? And how do you decide this is a job that we want to go ahead and bring Mike into the center of?
You know, there's a handful of criteria that I guess we would use to outline the things that would help make it a dirty job. Obviously, dirty is in the title. That helps. But I think it's got to do more than just that. It's got to hit a couple marks, you know, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's something that we don't know about and it's interesting to people, you know, that helps. You know, and just enough to do is another thing. So and there's a handful of these things, and I don't think it has to hit all of them, but if it hits a majority of them, then it's something that we start considering as a dirty job.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dirty Jobs is back with Mike Rowe in the lead host role, and it's on Sunday nights now at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Discovery. It's also streamed on their mega content service, Discovery Plus. We've got two of the executive producers with us live from Atlanta, Ben Franzen, and from the Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, Josh Berkeley. And they're both with us this half hour right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Avon with you live from New Haven, York. And if you have a question or comment for our guests, don't be shy. Get to that phone and make it go, 646-652-2906. Or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Remember, coming up Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, is 1 week from today, we will have from the brand-new HBO series Somebody Somewhere, which premieres next weekend, the creators and executive producers Hannah Boss and Paul Thoreen. From the movie that came out last year about the man behind Inside, Father Elwood Kaiser, the Paulist priest, it's called Hollywood Priest, the producer, writer, and director, Father Tom Gibbons. If you've never heard of Inside, you ought to. It's one of the great drama anthology series of all time. A lot of great people from Ricardo Montalban to Carol Burnett and many, many more appeared in some of their best episodes. And Father Elwood Kaiser was a very special human being in terms of putting quality religious drama on television that went beyond the norm. It was a groundbreaker. So be sure to tune in next Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. I think your listening will be well rewarded. Ben, staying with you, once you determine a subject, and how long this might take to prepare for the role, and how long does the organization behind the job take to sort of gear themselves up to welcome Mike?
Well, the welcoming usually there. It's amazing, the reception. When you call someone and say we're interested in doing dirty jobs, you know, it's as if they've won the lottery. They're so excited. They know the show. They're excited to be featured. They're excited to tell their story. So that part's great. You know, we're in usually, so to speak. As far as Mike's preparation, very little. And that's, you know, it's really, you know, myself and the field producer, Zach Hall, and others that do the research, do the reconnaissance, and then it really helps Mike to only know a little bit, because that way he's genuinely learning what it is like to apprentice for a day. And so that's, you know, we brief him so he's not totally blind, but that's it. He's learning in an honest fashion.
Mm-hmm. And Josh, once you set up a segment, how long does it take to go film or tape it?
Well, again, this is a better question for Ben, whose team was on the ground every day. There's a couple of days of scouting and prepping that they do. We try and shoot every job in a day. Oftentimes, you know, it may take 2 days. But again, we're in people's businesses. We're disrupting their lives. We try and get Mike, you know, a full day with them. As Ben said, you know, he's their apprentice for the day. You know, some of the jobs have more than one critical beat, so that may take a little extra. We may do an extra day on those jobs. But again, it's trying to get in there, keeping it fresh, keeping Mike's energy, enthusiasm, because they work him hard. And then it's on to the next. You know, so when production is up and running, the machinery goes from city to city to city. So it's within, you know, a day to 2 days for production.
Yeah. Ben, in the opening episode, one of the subjects that was covered was rod busting or rod busters. I understand they were in Tampa, Florida, or in that area. And these are people who have a very unusual assignment. They have to build or complete a bridge in this case, 1 day. That sounds like an incredible accomplishment to pull off.
Yeah. I think we realized rather quickly that wasn't possible. No, these guys, I forget how many miles of bridge they're doing, but I think later in the episode it's pointed out that it's about a four-year project. So this is many, many miles of bridge work, but incredible group of people, you know, doing work that, like I said earlier, you never see. Quite often, you never really think about it. You drive over a bridge, but you don't think about the skeleton that took way longer than what you see, years and years to build and ensure that it's safe. So it was quite remarkable to showcase this group of people. And, you know, they refer to themselves as cowboys in the sky. And it was just, you know, the whole crew was just blown away with how difficult their job is.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Bryn, with doing these episodes, do you find that in many instances, this is not just a story about a particular job or a particular skill, whatever degree of dirt or dirty it is, but it's also about the community where it's based, especially a small town where perhaps this job is like the major employer or a key employer for people in that city?
Sorry, Josh, I'll take that one, if that's okay. I think in this series right here, you see a good example of that in a community of people in McGee, Mississippi, that build tugboats. And every place you look in that community, they're shipbuilders. And that's really all they know. I mean, it's what their father knew and their father knew. And it's quite remarkable, just all the different types of transportation, you know, supply chain stuff is just coming out of this small community. And that's really what it's all about. These people live and die to build our boats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Josh, do you work on this series one episode at a time, or are you working on multiple episodes that are being produced at the same time?
Yeah, we work on multiple episodes. The team is either in physical production on location, and there's another set of folks back in the production company that are working on post. The shows are being prepped and scouted, shot and edited, and a lot of that overlaps. So our seasons are fairly condensed when we're in production. And obviously, you know, Mike does the writing. You know, Mike writes his portion to the show. So Mike is often shooting, writing, reviewing notes, all at the same time throughout the window of production.
Dirty Jobs, which was on Discovery Channel originally from 2005 to 2013, is back. And it's on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Discovery, also streamed on Discovery Plus, which is Discovery's mega content service, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, and in some places on your local cable system as well. We've got two key executive producers of the series with us, from Hotlanta, Ben Franzen, and from Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, Josh Berkeley. If you have a question or comment for them in our remaining minutes here on this half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised, ring the phone, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And stay tuned, because coming up, you have an opportunity to become our first Tomorrow Be Televised Classic Trivia Winner of the Year. So stand by for the question. Five prizes will be coming your way if you come through first with the correct answer. Ben, how do the people themselves that are profiled, that show Mike around the dirty job, how do they consider what they do? Do they consider it a job? Do they consider it a craft? Do they consider it a very special skill that they feel is a very important accomplishment in their lives? What's your sense from talking to the subjects themselves about how they see their life?
You know, I don't think that there's one answer to that, but I think the answer that you see a lot is people that don't know anything else. You know, you see that with the jellyfish captain, who's third generation, and you see that with the people that carve Crazy Horse Monument. You do see a lot, but that's not always the case. You know, you also see entrepreneurs that are starting something new. But I think the thing that they all share is a passion. They all think about what they do as an opportunity. And the biggest thing is that they're all very, very proud of what they do.
Mm-hmm. You know, Josh, last year was the 50th anniversary of the classic TV series Route 66, which was a groundbreaker because it was the first television series that was filmed on location all over the United States, not just the key highways and byways, but places you would never have guessed you would see a television series filmed. And one of the beauties of that show, particularly now when you see it in on YouTube or if a television station or network is running it, is it gives you a window, a peephole, if you will, into not only a time period, but also a culture. Do you find that Dirty Jobs does that too with these new episodes, that you get a peek into not only jobs, but also the lifestyle and cultures of a city or a community, places that if it wasn't for the series, you would never hear about?
Absolutely, Simon. You know, I think one of the great things about the series, and in particular, you know, this last batch of episodes, is a way that it connects the country. It's shining a spotlight on a very unique set of people doing a very unique job, but there's people doing these same jobs in other parts of the country. I think it unifies all of those people that are saying finally and proudly, yeah, you know, look at our job. You know, we made it into Dirty Jobs. And these are hardworking people, proud people. I think, you know, Mike was very adamant a few seasons back when we wanted to get to all 50 states. He thought it was very important that we have a job profiling somebody's hard work in every 50 state. And that was a huge milestone for the show. So, yes, I think it's part of the ethos, you know, of what we do. We want to make sure that, you know, we're not only crossing all the different industries like infrastructure and the food industry and the environment and farming, but we want to make sure that we're showing, you know, people in all walks of life across, you know, the great country that we have. Again, which is, I think, part of why the timing and Mike coming back to do the show is so important and so critical, because it's really, you know, shining a light on Americans doing American jobs, hardworking jobs, at a time where work and essential work is so part of, you know, the conversation. So yes, I totally agree with your statement.
Yeah. Many years ago, there was a CBS News correspondent, Charles Carrault, who, when getting tired of covering major stories, decided, I want to take a cameraman, a sound man, and a trailer, and just go on the highways and byways of America. He called it On the Road, and it became a legendary set of television reports for the CBS Evening News and for other places, as well as a series of specials. And at one point, a summer series ran a couple seasons or two. Does Mike Rowe, Ben, ever consider himself a Charles Carrault? or he considers himself in that kind of vein?
Well, I think that's a question you'd have to ask Tim, but I do. It is something we talk about, though, is that process and that show is, you know, kind of talking about what Josh talked about. Like, you know, one job is done in one part of the country, and then the same person on the other side, you know, recognizes that, and all these people are important. There is a little bit of a, you could throw a dart on a map with this show and celebrate people, assuming that, you know, the environment and the timing's right. So, yeah, I mean, the comparison, I think you'd have to ask Mike that, but I think that it that's the way we think about it, is all these jobs are equally important.
Huh. I mean, one thing I'd like to add is
go ahead, Josh. I think you're about to say something.
I was just going to say that, you know, at times Mike has described the show as a very unorthodox talk show, which I think plays into your question. I mean, even though he's physically active and he's working and he's being put through the paces, part of his goal is to interview this person through action and through work. And so I think there are a lot of similarities between Kuralt and what Mike does. And he's very proud of the fact that it's like taking a talk show and putting it out into the field.
Yeah. Ben, staying with the Kuralt idea, in his first On the Road book, which I have at home, Kuralt said that many times he and his crew would be going to one location and then find that they would stop along the way or take a fork in the road and find a totally different story that turned out to be better. Have any dirty work in this particular series of Dirty Job episodes, has one particular episode led to another that you found out about this, you know, out of the experience here, you found out about something or Mike found out about something somewhere else and decided, okay, that'll be my next stop?
Well, not so much that we changed during this season, although we did need to pivot a few times just on timing. But, you know, we had collected so many stories to begin with, and, you know, for efficiency, we kind of stuck with the plan. But that's not to say that during the process of filming, yeah, we discovered a lot of opportunities for future jobs that we're super excited about.
Yeah. So Josh, what are some of the upcoming Dirty Jobs as the season progresses?
Well, we've got quite a mix, actually. As Ben mentioned, we've got Mountain Carvers, a scorpion sweeping job that we do at night in the desert southwest. We've got iguana hunters for invasive species down in Florida. Let's see, we do some resurfacing rock sucking off of the roof of a large warehouse. Escalator maintenance, again, a very dangerous and very dirty job.
Josh, what is rock sucking? How does that serve the public? That's an interesting, I got to hear more about this one.
Yeah, I'll let Ben take that one. He was there and experienced it firsthand.
Yeah, so Simon, there's a kind of a weird, occupation of removing rock, usually river rock or heavy gravel, off of rooftops, which is kind of an outdated technology. And so there's kind of a niche of these large vacuum machines that have to fabricate a pipe system to go up there and create a vacuum, so to speak, with a handle. And this rock is flying through this tube at something like 80 miles per hour. And if you're not careful, it can create sparks and send that spark all the way down. And there's the occasional explosion in the vacuum machine itself. So this is pretty handmade stuff that's you got to know what you're doing. And the other thing is this, is that not only do they remove the rock, but then they also have to figure out where all that rock goes, which you'll see in part of the episode is taking these big trucks rocks and offering free rock to someone. And, you know, the surprise on people's face when you offer them a truckload full of rock and for free, you know.
And it seems like for both of you that with the segment about escalator maintenance, you will never think about going on and off an escalator again, particularly if you're in a major city.
That's right. That's right. And what makes its way, you know, into the inner workings of that escalator?
And, oh, boy, if you've ever seen an escalator torn apart, there's a lot of inner workings in that escalator. So kudos to those people for making it all happen. So for that and other dirty jobs, you go to Discovery Channel Sunday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And also, if you missed the program then, you can also catch it as well on Discovery Plus, Discovery's mega content service available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. For more details about the program online, you can go to discovery.com and discoveryplus.com. That's discovery.com and discoveryplus.com. Dirty Jobs, next episode, coming your way with Mike Rowe hosting, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Discovery. So check your local listings for the cable system in your area or satellite system in area that Discovery is on. Ben Frampton, Josh Berkeley, thank you both very much for joining us. Congratulations on bringing Mike Rowe and crew back for a new season of a great, great series. And hopefully this run will be as big, maybe bigger than the original.
Thank you, Simon.
Thanks, Simon.
You're welcome, Ben. Josh, take care. Have a great weekend.
You too.
You too. Thank you.
You're welcome. Ben Franzen joining us live from Atlanta, Georgia, and Josh Berkeley from Washington, D.C. this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Well, now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week, and we have a brand new question that we introduced on our first episode of the year on Monday. So we want you to know that if you're first with the correct answer, you will win five prizes, including the wonderful book about Betty White, 100 Remarkable Moments in Extraordinary Life by our guest from last year, Ray Richmond, the celebrated entertainment news correspondent and columnist. Plus, the unofficial Hocus Pocus cookbook, a crayon set of The Loud House from Nickelodeon. We've got the Freak Brothers t-shirt from Tubi, and we have the recent special on DVD on PBS and BYU TV, 20 Years of Christmas with the Tabernacle Choir with bonus material. And all you have to do is come up with the answer to this question. Complete the title of this 1976 ABC made-for-TV movie starring John Travolta, The Boy Blank. Complete the title of this 1976 ABC made-for-TV movie starring John Travolta, The Boy Blank. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please make sure to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win all five of those prizes. Again, it's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, we have to have the answer by email. It must be, by the way, specific and correct. And make sure you put your name and your mailing address with the answer so that we can get the prize out to you as soon as possible. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning, if need be throughout the weekend, at my Facebook and Twitter page, Simon Applebaum on Facebook, and at UBC Simon, TWBT on Twitter. It's Simon Applebaum on Facebook and my Twitter handle, and that is at UBC Simon, TWBT. Either way, we will get your answer. Or at least you can use that to hear to see the question, and then, of course, you answer by email. So remember, as we like to say around here, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so, and all the very best. Well, that's our first hour of Tomorrow Be Televised, but stand by. We've got another hour good to go for you. Coming up in our next hour, we'll have, at the bottom of the hour, the executive producer of the popular NBC series American Ninja Warrior, Brian Richardson, and one of the contestants from the upcoming episodes ahead, former NFL player Anthony Trupp. And we'll also have our first Show to Know segment of the year. It's ABC's new miniseries that premiered last night, Women of the Movement, starring the brilliant Tony Award-winning actress who played Tina Turner, won Best Leading Role in a Musical, Adrienne Warren. She plays the woman in the movement. But first, we will talk to the founder of one of the newest smart TV distributed television services, Unchained TV. Jane Velez-Mitchell will join us after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, BTR is your home for The Listening Room. Check it out today at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. That's The Listening Room. That's 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7, always at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Marvy Televised. Welcome to our second hour of this special two-hour edition of the program about TV's current and future, our second episode of this new unfolding year, 2022. And we welcome those of you joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 33 degrees at the top of the hour. We are done with the snow that hit us overnight into this morning, about 3 to 5 inches around the New York metro area, depending on where you are, if you're listening to us from anywhere in that region. And other places like Washington, D.C., Kentucky, Tennessee got one inch and far more. Happy you're with us. More guests coming away in the hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple, particularly if you're joining us for the first time. All you got to do is pick up the phone and give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. You can also be involved and interactive with our chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. We are awaiting Jane Velez Mitchell. She is the founder of one of the newest programming services you can find on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. It's called Unchained TV, and it's all about the world of vegans. That's where we talk about plant-based foods and products. And you can find Unchained TV on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, and smart TVs made by LG and others not too far down the road. So, Jane, if you're listening to us, give us a call, 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see you're ready to go, we will put you on the air. And so what we'll do is, while we wait for Jane to come on, let's give you the first installment of a regular feature that we've done now for several years on this program. We call it A Show to Know. It's about a program that comes on that we think is worth your watching. It could be on broadcast TV, cable, syndication, multicast channels, or smart TV sets or smart TV devices. And you might not know about it because either not well marketed or promoted or advertised, or it falls on the radar screen of critics and journalists. Well, our first Show to Know for this year premiered last night on ABC, and it's a miniseries, the first they've done in quite a while, called Women of the Movement. This is being prepared as an ongoing series about women, particularly women of color, and what they've accomplished in the course of their lifetimes. Well, the first of this series, which is a six-episode series, it's actually three two-hour episodes, two episodes in each showing, is called Women of the Movement, as I said, and it's all about the mother of the famous Emmett Till. That's the person who was brutally murdered in the Jim Crow South of the 1950s. I had a chance to see some of the episodes, and what makes it remarkable is the breakthrough performance in television of someone who has become a top Broadway star in the last couple of years. Her credits include Bring It On, Supple Alley, and more recently, her breathtaking performance as Tina Turner in the Broadway musical hit Tina, which won her last year the Tony Award for Actress in a Leading Role in a Musical. She was nominated, by the way, for Shuffle Along for Best Featured Actress in a Musical a couple of years earlier. Well, Adrienne gives a sensational performance as the mother of Emmett Till, namely Mannie Till Mobley. And it's all about her fight to get justice for her son, who, as I said, was brutally murdered. The program came on last night. It will be running the next two Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. And I want to give a shout-out to Target, the department store chain, for sponsoring the opening episode last night and also being involved in a series of vignettes featuring contemporary women of the movement that were presented throughout the opening episode. Really well done. So, again, the program is Women of the Movement. It's on ABC, your local ABC station, and it will be on the next two Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific time, 2 hours per night. I believe Hulu will also be playing the show after it runs on ABC. And we should point out that viewer discretion is advised because of violence, racial epithets, and racial slayings that are presented because of the time period that this program takes place. Once again, Women of the Movement, it is on the next Thursday night and the Thursday night after, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific time. Check your locations for the ABC station in your area. Also, I believe it will be replayed on Hulu, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And for more details about the program online, you go to abc.com. That's abc.com. Well, here's something I'd like to know. Do you have an idea for a show to know? Is there a TV program that you like that you feel does not get enough attention, no matter where it's played? Well, we'd like to know about it, and we'd like to highlight it on this program. And when we do, you, not me, you, get the credit for it. So what you got to do is drop a line. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. You can also drop it on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter. I do check them regularly, and we will get in contact with you if we decide to use your suggestion on the air. Once again, it's simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com. So make sure you also enclose your name and where you're from so that if we use your suggestion on the air in future show no segments, you get the credit. Okay? Okay. All right, we are still waiting for James Ellis Mitchell to join us. She is the founder of Unchained TV, the new network of all things vegan, especially plant-based foods and products. So, Jane, if you're listening, give us the call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. And as soon as I hear that you're ready to go or see that you're ready to go on the air, we'll get you on immediately. And we should point out that the name sounds familiar, especially for those of you in New York. Jane Bellis Mitchell was a top correspondent for many years on the nightly news on WCBS-TV, the CBS affiliate here in the Big Apple, and then later had her own program as host on Headline News called Issues with Jane Bellis Mitchell, which ran, I believe, for 6 years. And lately she's doing all sorts of very interesting projects, and now she has come up with Unchained TV, which is actually based on a website that she founded dealing with vegan matters and social justice and other things too. And that's at UnchainedTV.com. Unchained is all one phrase, UnchainedTV.com. So, Jane, again, when I see you're ready to go on the air, give us that call, 646-652-2906. Sooner you do, sooner we will get you on the air. Let me just take a breath here. So, while we wait for Jane to come on, give me an opportunity to share a couple things. One, on the top of the program, we gave you the news that Sidney Poitier, one of the tremendous groundbreaking actors in the history of entertainment, passed away earlier today at the age of 94. No cause of death was reported as we went on the air this afternoon, over an hour ago. And Sidney Poitier was a remarkable, remarkable actor. He was mesmerizing, powerful, extraordinary in just about every role he had, whether it was in early films that he did in the 1950s like No Way Out, Edge of the City, and his turn in The Defiant Ones along with Tony Curtis, or 60s movies like A Raisin in the Sun, Pressure Point, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, To Sir with Love, and certainly In the Heat of the Night. What you might not know about Sidney Poitier is that television, which was not part of his early career to a great extent, did become his career as an actor in the 1990s. One of his first roles was an extraordinary one, playing the Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall in a miniseries, a four-hour series on ABC called Separate But Equal. It was an amazing program directed by George Stevens Jr., and it won the Emmy for Best Miniseries. And I believe Poitier was also nominated for Best Actor in a miniseries or made-for-TV movie. And that was just the first of a string of made-for-TV movies and miniseries that he would do. And they were all terrific, including a sequel to one of his most famous pictures, To Sir with Love, which was just on Turner Classic Movies about a week and a half ago, and a remake of one of the great independently made movies of all time from the 1960s, directed by Frank Perry, David and Lisa. Remember that? I believe it was Cara Delevingne and Susan Strasberg was in that. Janet Margolin, excuse me. Cara Delevingne and Janet Margolin were the actors in a really remarkable independent movie. Incredible film. If you've never seen it, you ought to. The thing about Sidney Poitier that made him so special was that he was so down-to-earth in every single character. And no matter how he talked to you, he was so direct. You had every inkling of the kind of character he was going to play. And he played it to the hilt. There were times when his power was quiet, and there were times when his power was incredible. Loud and Proud. He won the Oscar for Best Actor in a film in the early 1960s for Lilies of the Field, directed by a TV director, Ralph Nelson, who earlier in his career did such classic TV plays as, and he also did the movie version of Requiem for a Heavyweight. One of my favorite Sidney Poitier performances, movies or TV, was A Raisin in the Sun. I still believe to this day it was one of the great, great movies that is in many ways a buried treasure. Of course, it was adapted from the great Broadway play by the talented Lorraine Hansberry, who left this world way too soon in the mid-1960s. And it was also one of those few Broadway musical or play adaptations where most of the original cast, and Poitier was in the original cast, one of the few Broadway performances, were in the movie version, including Diana Sands, I believe Lou Gossett Jr., Ruby Dee, and the extraordinary Claudia McNeil, who plays the mother. That performance is on my short list of best supporting performances, best acting performances that were never nominated for an Oscar and should have been. If she had been nominated for an Oscar, I think she would have won it in a landslide. That performance is a heartbreaker. It tugs at you from start to finish, and the whole film does too. It's beautifully put together. Hansberry's script is marvelous. Great music score by Lawrence Rosenthal. And everybody in that cast is letter perfect. I hope TCM will, when they do, and I'm sure they will do a Sidney Poitier retrospective, make sure that Raising the Sun is part of it. Also Pressure Point, where he does a great job opposite Bobby Darin in a very underrated movie in the early 90s. I think it was like 1962-63. I hope that the retrospective will include Separate but Equal, and also the sequel to Sir with Love. I thought he was very good in that. I believe his last performance was for television. I think in like 20, I was looking up on Wikipedia this afternoon, 2012, 2013. And it was, again, a made-for-TV movie. I'm sure, as I said, the Turner Classic Movies will, at the very earliest date, do a full retrospective of his work. And I'm sure that there will be a lot of newscasts and magazine shows tonight and over the weekend that will pay tremendous tribute to a truly unique actor, director, ambassador. He was ambassador of African Americans, an ambassador of diversity. He was ambassador of the Bahamas, where he came from. He was ambassador of entertainment. He truly was a one-of-a-kind individual. His like will never be around. But and he broke the mold for so many actors today of color to make it in television, in film, in all facets of entertainment. Many people owe their careers to the groundbreaking work that Sidney Poitier did for so many years. And certainly our world is the better for his being in it. We are still awaiting Jane Dallas Mitchell to join us, the founder of Unchained TV, the vegan plant-based network that's available on smart TV sets and smart devices. Jane, if you're hearing us, give us a call, 646-652-2906, and we'll put you on ASAP. So give us that call or let us know in the chat room what's going on. And if you're having trouble, let us know, and we'll work it to make sure you get on the air. And again, Unchained TV is available now on Roku, Amazon Fire TV Sticks, Apple TV, and LG Smart TV sets, and with other smart TV sets and devices coming through. And by the way, their Facebook page already has a lot of followers. Several hundred thousand are currently on, and it's a very interesting page, and a lot of interesting programs are being put on that service that deal with cooking plant-based foods, using them, plus other plant-based products. And they just did a very interesting campaign called Veganary, sort of like a New Year's Eve, New Year's Day event, encouraging people to make vegan-oriented New Year's resolutions. So, Jane, give us a call, and as soon as I see you're ready to go on the air, we'll get you on. In the meantime, want to let you know that our first three-episode week of Tomorrow Be Televised will be coming your way next Monday, Tuesday, and Friday at this very time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Coming up on Monday, we will introduce you to two production companies that have big plans for 2022. One is Boat Rocker Media, They're responsible for both a variety of scripted and unscripted shows, including The Go Big Show, which is premiering this month for its second season on TBS. We'll speak to the co-executive chairman of the venture, David Fortier and Ivan Sheenberg. And we'll also tell you about Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment. They got a lot of irons in the TV fire, such as the mega content services Crackle and Crackle Plus, the new ad-supported service that is available on demand on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, ad-supported. And they've got a number of production companies. They've molded into a whole division, and they plan to do a lot of scripted and unscripted shows this year ahead and beyond. We'll speak with the president of Crackle Plus, Philippe Dutton. Then on Tuesday, you'll hear somebody that if you saw his face on television, you'd probably say, I don't know the name, but I certainly recognize the face. His name is Ariane Moyet. He's done a lot of episodic TV work in the episodes of Law & Order, Law & Order SVU, many other episodic TV shows. And he is the creator, writer, director of a series that started on the web and then graduated in the last year, year and a half, to Topic, the mega content service. It's called The Accidental Wolf. It stars Tony Award-winning musical actress Kelly O'Hara in a very unusual role. And the second season premiered a few weeks ago on Topic, and Ariane will join us on our special Tuesday episode. And finally, on Friday, from the new HBO series Somebody Somewhere, premiering later this month, creators and executive producers Hannah Boss and Paul Thareen. And then you'll meet the producer, writer, director of a film that came out last year about one of the most amazing television creators ever, Father Elwood Kaiser, the Paulist father who came through with a breakthrough in religious drama, the anthology Insight, that ran for 25 years and won a bunch of awards along the way and put some of the best writers, directors, and actors together to make some unforgettable drama. As they said on the show for many years, it was stories of spiritual conflict in the 20th century. I had the chance to interview Father Kaiser for a Broadcast Week story back in the early 1980s, a very remarkable human being. We'll talk to Father Tom Gibbons, the producer, writer, director of Hollywood Priest that came out at various film festivals last year, coming to others, and maybe a theater near you before 2022 is out. That's all coming your way Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Remember, if you would like to hear recent episodes of our show, including this one, catch us on replay, or you want to catch up on episodes you missed, and we had a lot of great ones over the last year and earlier, all you got to do is go to our homepage anytime you like. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio, all one phrase, .com/televised. And you can check out our episodes anytime you like. Another way you can check out our episodes is through our podcast sites, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Verbal, Reason, Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Music. They all have episodes available for you to catch anytime before the end of tonight or anytime this weekend. So be sure to check them out. Please give them a patronage. And if you like the show when you hear it on those sites, let them know. Drop them a line, email, or a social media communication, and let them know you like the show that way. Incidentally, if there's a podcast site that you like, Spotify, Audible, Podcast One, Voice America, that doesn't take our show right now, well, we'd like to get on those sites and expand our reach. And one way we can do it is be nice, drop them a line, let them know you'd like to hear the show, and have them contact me or I'll contact them, and we'll make something happen. That's how we got on Amazon Music and Apple Podcasts and Verbal and Reason last year alone. So, again, if there's a podcast site you like that doesn't take our show and you think they should, let them know. Be nice about it. Don't be curt. Don't be uncivil. Make it happen. And let me know. Drop me a line by email or by LinkedIn, Facebook, or Twitter. And let me know. And let me know how to get in touch with them. And we'll make something happen. You can bet on that. All right? All right. Okay. It is looking like Jane Velez-Mitchell is not going to be able to join us. We will find out what happened, where the breakdown was. And we will invite her to come on one of our episodes next week, Monday, Tuesday, or Friday, and we'll let you know. So we apologize to all of you that are waiting to have Jane on the program. And, Jane, we apologize to you if you were trying to get through or something happened that you couldn't communicate with us. No problem. We will get you on next week. So we'll get back to you, and we'll see what the story is and make something happen, okay? Okay. In the meantime, I want to let you know that if you want to check out Unchained TV, all you got to do is go to Roku, Amazon Fire TV. That's the stick version of Amazon Fire. I believe it's also on the Amazon TV sets as well, Apple TV, and smart TV sets made by LG. And if you want more details about the network, all you can do is go to UnchainedTV.com. It's UnchainedTV, all one phrase, .com, UnchainedTV.com. And again, we're sorry that Jane Bells Mitchell could not be with us, the founder of Unchained TV, on today's episode. But we will get in contact with her, get in communication, get the breakdown worked out, and try to have her on one of our episodes next week. And we'll let you know ASAP once we get the reset happening. Before we bring our next guest on at the bottom of the hour from American Ninja Warrior, so stay tuned because we've got coming up Brian Richardson, the executive producer of that popular NBC series, and Anthony Trucks, former National Football League player, who's one of the contestants, I believe, on the next set of episodes. So we hope to have them on. I believe they're coming up from Los Angeles at the bottom of the hour. So stay tuned, and if you have a question or comment for them, give us that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04, by name. I mentioned earlier about CES 2022, the annual Consumer Electronics Show put on by the Consumer Technology Association. It is now in its final hours out there in Las Vegas. The estimates are that between 40 and 60,000 people came when their last in-person event in Vegas happened in 2019. There were over 180,000. For those who don't know, last year it was all virtual with people tuning in from all over the world because of the coronavirus pandemic. Certainly the Omicron variant and the cancellation of flights over the last 2 weeks by many major airlines, to the tune of 1,000 or 2,000 a day or more, played havoc with a lot of people trying to make it in person. So I want to say off the bat, congratulations and a big shout out to Gary Shapiro, the head of the Consumer Technology Association, and all the people involved in organizing CES for going through in person, for not letting this pandemic, or this mutation of the pandemic, which is far less deadly, basically when people are getting this situation, is not leading to hospitalizations, not leading to deaths. People get it. They get either no symptoms whatsoever or at most a headache or a body ache. They can take an aspirin or an Advil or Tylenol and get it all worked out. So congratulations to them for making it happen. I did have a chance to watch the presentations by the major smart TV set makers, Samsung, LG, Hisense, and Sony. And what came through from those presentations basically are three things. First, that everyone is placing a bet on video games being available through the television set without having to use a video game console. How do you use the games? Through your voice, through your remote control, or through a wireless controller that doesn't need the console. Just place it, aim it at the set, and you're good to go. Samsung is working on a gaming hub. LG is working on one, too. It seems gaming hubs are the thing, and we'll see how that works out as 2022 goes forward. That's bet number one. Bet number two, that interactive TV in all sorts of forms will break loose. Everything from interactive content, where you choose the pathway of the show, to interactive fitness and telehealth networks, teleeducation, video chat services, all sorts of services, and interactive advertising and commerce. And bet number three, and it's a biggie, is that the smart TV set will become the hub by which you deal with all your household chores and really dealing with the quality of life in your apartment or your house, working together with the refrigerator, the microwave oven, the coffee pot, the air conditioning, the lights, the air quality, and managing your energy, so on and so forth. One of the things that was interesting to me was Samsung's announcement of two projects. One, the Samsung Home Hub, which would be a video assistant that would allow you to deal with all sorts of household chores using the smart TV appliances all around your apartment or your house or apartment. And the other was an alliance called the Home Connectivity Alliance involving Samsung, General Electric, Electrolux, Train, all sorts of various consumer products. Again, it's all about providing a better smart home or apartment environment and having the TV front and center as a way to control that environment for your best interest. It'll be interesting to see how fast that alliance develops, whether other smart TV set makers will be part of it, and how ambitious this venture will be. Incidentally, we are trying to contact the head of the alliance and invite that person to come on our show, along with somebody from Samsung's SmartThings project, which also is going to be part of this venture. We'll keep you posted on that. So anyway, those were the three big takeaways of CES 2022 when it came to television sets. That no question that the smart TV set, the smart TV device, is going to get more interactive, more versatile, and give you more ways to watch, not only watch television, but use television, whether it's through your voice, using artificial intelligence audio services like Siri, Alexa, Google Assistant, without having to go through a separate speaker, maybe artificial intelligence video, as well as cams that allow you through your hand to manipulate the picture, guide it up, down, diagonally, side to side. So anyway, that's the story, and we'll have more to say about CES 2022, I'm sure, or the ramifications of what took place this week in Las Vegas as the week unfolds. All right, one of the most popular series on NBC is America Ninja Warrior, and right now we have got, I believe, on the line the executive producer of AMW, joining us live in an interradio exclusive, Brian Richardson. Brian, welcome to our program.
Well, thanks for having me.
You're very, very welcome. Great. And Brian, where are you calling us from? What city?
I'm calling you from Studio City, L.A., basically.
L.A. And joining us is a contestant from AMW. He's a former National Football League player. It's a pleasure to welcome to this program, Anthony Trucks. Anthony, welcome in.
Thank you for having me. How are you doing, man?
Very well, thank you. Where are you calling us from, Anthony?
I am from a town called Walnut Creek, California, so north of Studio City by like 6 hours.
Great. Well, it's a pleasure. And by the way, Anthony, are you a contestant on the upcoming season of the show, or were you a contestant on the previous season that was on this past year?
I was actually 2 years ago was my last, unfortunately. I went, was it 2000? I'm going to say season 9, 10, and 11. And then when everything went crazy, I stayed at home and watched everybody have fun on TV.
Mm-hmm. Got it. We'll talk about your experience in a bit. Brian, why does this series continue to be so popular?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's a really universal idea of overcoming obstacles, and everybody overcomes obstacles in their daily life, and the show is sort of a great metaphor for that. So many of the people are out there who, you know, whether it's weight loss, whether it's overcoming a medical issue, it's a way to sort of get in shape and have a real measure for that. And the show itself, I think, strikes a chord because it's something different than what's out there. It's a very positive show. It's a show that you can watch with your kids. Very few shows out there are something that you can sit down and watch with your teenagers or your six-year-old, and this is one of the few ones that's out there.
And this show is based on a popular format from Asia called Ninja Warrior, which I believe the episodes are now running on G4, the reconstituted network that a division of Comcast, the parent of NBC Universal, is now running. Are you getting any feedback, by the way, from people who have seen Ninja Warrior on G4 in terms of has it given them a better appreciation of what you do putting this series together?
Well, it's actually been out there for a long time. We originally came from went back to the original version of G4 when it was a cable channel, which was kind of geared towards, gamers and a young crowd. And they had some Japanese programming on, and it was originally called Sasuke over there. And it was a little more down and dirty version of Ninja Warrior. And that's really how it all began. They started airing these Japanese versions, and they became fairly popular. And the folks at G4 said, well, why don't we do our own version, an American version of that? And that's what they started doing on G4. And the first couple seasons were very kind of low budget and not a whole lot of people applied. And then it just started growing over the years until it got so big on G4 that NBC, the parent company, basically plucked it away and said, you know what, that's a pretty good idea. Why don't we put that on primetime? And that's when it really took off.
We're going to have a pause for a moment, and when we come back, we will have more with Brian Richardson, the executive producer of American Ninja Warrior on NBC, and we'll also find out how Anthony Trupp became a contestant and what he went through during his time on one of A&W seasons. We will be back with both Brian and Anthony after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, tunein.com, and speaker.com. You're over the best internet radio in the planet, serving nearly 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home for a very unusual program this coming Sunday night. It's called Life for You. That's Life for You with Vero. Check it out this Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. Life for You with Vero, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of this big two-hour extravaganza of Tomorrow Be Televised, our second episode of the program about TV's current and future this 2022. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. Happy to have you with us. Welcome to those of you just joining at the bottom of the hour. We've got already on the phone from Los Angeles, Brian Richardson, the executive producer of the popular NBC series that came out of the original G4, American Ninja Warrior. And also joining us, one of the previous contestants on a recent season of the show, former NFL player Anthony Trucks. And if you have a question or comment for both of them or either of them, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number good anyway, you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio. We're getting to our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Anthony, what perked your interest into being a contestant?
You'll be honest, my wife actually signed me up without telling me. And so it was very weird. But once I found out what it was, I think it was, like Brian had talked about, there's this really kind of engaging and really enamoring aspect of the fact that it's something that anybody can do, no matter what walk of life. My father-in-law, who's like 70, down to my kids who were like 5 and 6, they love the show. And so I think for me, I was like, this is super cool. I love how positive it is. I love the energy of it. I love the announcers. It was all just great. And so the thought was like, I would love to be able to be a guy that hits a buzzer. So that was kind of the goal for me. What did I got to do to prepare myself to go out there and excel on the show?
Had you seen the show on a regular basis before your wife popped the good news to you?
No, actually. I thought it was a different show called Wipeout. I'm like, I'm not going to go out there and get hit in the face with massive, like, you know, big balls and fall in mud. But when I saw it, I was like, oh, it looked like very, very different and a lot more professional and cool when I got around it. But no, I'd never actually seen it, had never even spent time on any obstacle course like it prior.
Brian, for people like Anthony who have been previous in the athletic world, in his case with football, does being an athlete in whatever the sport is, does it help or hurt you in being a ninja warrior?
Well, it's really interesting because we frequently try to get, athletes and champions, Olympians, people from other sports, and in all honesty, it usually doesn't translate. A lot of the, particularly football guys, they're usually bigger and bulkier, and they're sort of not really built for obstacles. Anthony was kind of an exception, which was kind of what made him great, is that he was big, over 200 pounds, and he actually came out his first time on the course and crushed it. But he was kind of an outlier. We've had several NFL players who have come on and didn't do so well. We've had pro baseball players, NBA players. We've had a lot of Olympians, and most of them don't do so well, even though they're great athletes. It's just a pretty specific kind of skill to have. It really helps if you've spent any time in a gym just to know how to – simple things like a leche, which is basically swinging from one bar to another, something you might have done on a playground. But on our courses, you need to do it, a good distance. And a lot of really good athletes don't really know how to sort of generate a swing, and that hurts them, and they fall on the second obstacle. So to answer your question, great. We've had great athletes, and they usually don't do well. Anthony was kind of an exception to that.
Mm-hmm. In some ways, your program is like The Price is Right, because – like The Price is Right has different pricing games, and like every show, you don't know like what pricing game is coming up. And in your situation, you have these different elements of your course. How often do you mix things up? Do you mix it up in the middle of the season? Do you do have a particular setup of the course for one season, and then you, if you want to make changes, add something new, detract something, you do it the following season. What is the modus operandi of how the course works?
Well, it's always a different course, sort of from night to night, from episode to episode. We have a few things that are sort of iconic that we keep the same. Basically, the first obstacle and the sixth obstacle, which is the warped wall, which has been around forever. But almost everything in between we change out. So if you watch this week, the course will look a certain way, and then the following week that will have several different obstacles in it. Each season, we work with our partners who help build the obstacles, and we basically go into an R&D season where we start trying new ideas, and it starts on the paper with somebody who drew something up, and then if we like that, we do a kind of a prototype in the warehouse, and we see how that looks and how it's playing, and if it seems to be going well, then we build a larger version of that and test it. We have testers who come and run through the obstacle, and we just see how it's playing. Is it too hard? Is it too easy? Do we need to, you know, change that from a small ball to a bigger ball or a bigger ring? So each season we have a whole new process to create new obstacles, usually a couple of dozen new obstacles for every season. And some we bring back from year to year because they played well the year before or they're a fan favorite, but we won't see them in the exact same place exact same time. So usually you're looking at a new course every year when you compete.
Yeah. Anthony, how does that impact your training if you realize that maybe the only consistent thing or consistent element of the course is the last one and you got so much to get to that you may not know, like from episode to episode, what elements are going to be there and what's not?
Yeah, it affects it massively. You know, it's one of those things where people are always shocked when they say, well, you know, how many times do you get to go on the apparatus before you go? And we go, zero. Like, they show it to us as a tester, and they pretty much hide you behind a wall and say, when your turn's up, go do what you can. So training-wise, you have to be holistic. You have to do everything. Can you lache? Can you balance? Do you have grip strength? Like, you never know. And I think that's also what makes it kind of so cool and engaging is, like, when you get through it, it's an honor. Like, it's a badge of honor that I hit a buzzer. Like, it's really cool because you know what it takes to do that. So it's good and not good at the exact same time.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of training did you go through? How did you prepare? What was your regimen like?
Oh, so I lucked out. So whenever they called me, I was like 240 pounds. I was able to get down to like 225 before I actually went on. But there's a place local to me. There's a bunch of cool ninja gyms that are popping up and have popped up all over the country, all over the world now. So I happen to have one in my backyard that, in fact, has one of the, I think, the longest tenured ninjas, a guy named Brian Kretsch, who was at. It was called Apex Movement. And I think Ryan Keneally owned it at the time. And so I was able to go there, and they taught me, like, the basics. Like, here's the most basic stuff. So for me is learning how to go from bar to bar with my hands. I'm a football guy who has, you know, big lower body, and I'm not meant to hang by my hands, but learning how to be able to jump, transition, to grab, how to work, like, the balance type stuff. Most people realize it's very technical. Like, you have one shot, and if you miss it, you're done for the season. So they were able to give me some of the most basic things, and from there was just, can I prepare my mind and my body to be in front of people, just me, the lights, the cameras, the noise, and go to work. And so preparation was definitely half mental as much as it was, you know, half physical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really
did you find that your football training helped or hindered you?
Yeah, hindered. I mean, football is all about big legs, power, so that was not helping because I'm just pretty much carrying around dead weight, quite literally, unless I'm running across something. But I will tell you, though, football taught me to be able to manage the nerves of the eyes. Because when you're out there, it's a stadium of people. It's bright lights in your face. It's the, you know, it's all of a sudden this thing goes, okay, get ready to go, man. 5, 4, 3, 2, 2, and then it's just you. And I think I was able to calm my nerves having played in the NFL in front of, you know, millions of people between TV and the stands. I think that was the one thing that helped me. But physical training, besides grip strength to be able to lift a bunch of weight as a deadlift or power clean, there wasn't a whole lot of benefit.
We are speaking with two people involved with NBC's popular series, American Ninja Warrior, executive producer Brian Richardson, live from Los Angeles, and former contestant Anthony Trucks joining us live from Walnut Creek, California, not far from L.A. And if you have a question or comment for both of our guests from American Ninja Warrior, who are joining us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Remember, we've got three episodes of our program coming your way next week, Monday, Tuesday, and Friday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Coming up on Monday, from Boat Rocker Media, one of the fastest-growing production companies of both scripted and unscripted television, co-executive producers, our co-executive chairman, David Fortier and Ivan Sheenberg, and the president of the popular mega content series Crackle Plus, who's involved with his parent company, Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment, Philippe Goulton. And coming up on Tuesday, the creator-writer-director of the popular topic series, The Accidental Wolf, now in its second season, starring Tony Award musical winner Kelly O'Hara, Adrian Moyev. They're both coming up Monday and Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And then that's our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Brian, how long is a American Ninja Warrior course, and how long does it take to construct it?
Well, we sort of have two different – well, we have several different versions of our course. The basic, the sort of starter course, which we use for qualifying, is 6 obstacles long. And then we have for the semifinals, it's 10 obstacles long. And then once we go to Vegas for the finals, we have stages 1, 2, 3, and 4, which are all different lengths. But normally when we roll into a city, it takes about a week to 10 days to build the course. In whether we're in an arena or we used to, you know, build them sometimes on city streets. And so you have to, there's a whole lot that goes into it. We roll into town kind of like the circus. There's a fleet of 18-wheelers, and it takes a while to unload all the truss, fill the pools, put up all the lighting and the artwork and everything. It's quite an operation. We've got a crew of about 200 people that it takes to build the course in any one place.
Anthony, where did you think you, when you were competing, what was your best part of the course?
The best part of the course, man. There was one, I don't know if you call it the best, but the one that I know I'm still proud I accomplished was they had these called a battering ram. Imagine it's 15 feet above your head are these poles, and on these poles are like these toilet roll-sized kind of tubes. And you have to jump on a trampoline up to these, wrap your arms and forearms around, and you have to swing your body to slide down the pole and then transition, like swing, let go, grab another one, hold on with just your forearm, swing, you know, slide down again and swing. And for some reason, that's the one where I go, I look at it, I go, I don't know how I did it. I have no idea how I got through. And that was the 5th of 6 obstacles on the first qualifying round. And that was the one that I think just, it was full just, I had this aggression of, maybe the football mind came, like I'm not going to fall down. So that was probably my favorite. It's from where I fell down, skinned my knee, and at one point did like the worm to get back up. But it was, for the most part, a joy, all of them. That one stands out the most in my mind for some reason.
Hmm. Two keys to, I think, the success of your program, Brian, is the way it's directed and also the host. And we'll get to the host in a moment because one of them, Matt, was on our show last year before he did the Live from Tokyo Summer Olympics morning show on Peacock. 5-hour show. He did a fantastic job, Matt. But first, you know, with shows of this kind, there's usually like two ways to go. You can either do a director who's big on sports television, sports broadcasts, or you can go with someone who has experience in live entertainment programming or award shows or something like Dancing with the Stars, something like that. But which way did you go in terms of directing, and what do you think makes the show and the directing of the show work?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we went with the first option. We went with a sports director. Our director is a guy named Patrick McManus, who is basically works for NBC Sports and a lot of other networks, and has done, you know, NFL games and horse racing and auto racing and pretty much every sport that's out there, and is great at it. In addition to being just a hell of a guy to spend time with. But, because he treats it, you know, like a live sporting event. We need to have angles. We need to be able to do replays. We need to be able to see whether the foot hit the water or whether, when they land, be able to catch the expressions on their face and the smiles and the pain if it was a big – big move and things like that. And I think that's something that Patrick brings to it with that sports experience.
Yeah. Is he related to Sean McManus, the head of CBS Sports?
He's not. He is not.
Different matters. And by the way, Sean's done a wonderful job with CBS over the years. And, of course, many people remember him because he was a sibling of Jim McKay, the great host of ABC's Wide World of Sports for many, many years, one of the best sportscasters ever. And talk about Matt, the host, and his sidekick. They are, when I watch your program, I love what they do. They it's like yin and yang. And I thought that Matt did a wonderful job. He was on our show. He did a wonderful job with Peacock doing the Olympic morning show with his
We were lucky because those were both our main hosts, Matt Eisman and Akbar Bajabiamila. They went from our show and went straight to Tokyo and did an awesome job hosting a live, kind of almost like a Today Show-ish kind of show over there in Tokyo with the Olympians, and did an awesome job. But yeah, we're very fortunate to have Matt and Akbar, and also our sideline reporter Zuri Hall, who's also incredibly talented. They have such a great passion for the sport, for the people. You know, our show is a little bit different than most in that we have people come back year after year, the competitors. So they've literally seen some of these people grow up, seen them have kids, get married, and it's almost like they're old friends when they see them every year, and they really bring that to the broadcast. They like these people, and they really do get excited, and I think it comes across on TV. And particularly, as I think the viewers appreciate it and producers appreciate it as well, because we don't have to do a whole lot with those guys. They get it.
Mm-hmm. Anthony, were you able to see, after you did your event, see the replays? And what, if you so, what did you learn from them?
I definitely watched the replays. It's interesting, you watch them and you have that moment of regret, like, if only I put my hand there, or if only I had stepped here, or gone slower. Because I think that's one of the things, you always want to get better. As you watch it, it's a drive to, it's almost an insatiable drive to be better, to do better next time. And I think what's cool is you're never really competing against everybody else with this. You're always competing against yourself. And so I love that when I was looking at stuff, like, I'd watch replays if I could, if somebody happened to be watching or giving me feedback. But the other ninjas, when you get done and you go back into the area, they were always so adamant to give you perspectives that you hadn't seen. Like the Papal Ninja, Sean, he's from my same area, he always gave me great insights, great perspectives. So, like, not only did I learn stuff, but, like, people were teaching me stuff from what they learned. But yeah, man, I always look back and go, if only I would have grabbed there. Like, matter of fact, the last time I was on the show, there was I was going up and over these kind of two, like, looked like pills, but they would spin. And I got to the very last one, and when I went to kind of swing down and grab, my hand was, like, just a couple inches too much to the left, and then the whole thing spun, and I went down. And then you look back and go, if only that wouldn't have happened. So you always learn stuff, and then I think what a teacher do also is learn how to come back from setbacks.
It's so amazing sometimes watching sports or watching this series, how sometimes the difference between moving on round to round or not succeeding is that matter of inches, or that matter of how you grip something or how you stay in a certain spot, try to move from one ring to another ring or so forth.
Yeah, it's always what it is. I mean, it's literally the moment of looking back and trying to see how can I do something different or better. And it's all, and that thing is like, Brian talks about, they also change it up. So, like, you prepare for one thing and then you got to prepare for something new. It's why I got to prepare, honestly, for every opportunity, every situation. But, yeah, it's literally a matter of, like, this one thing or whatever could have been, and trying to do your best when you're in the midst of it, you're tired, your hands are sore, the crowd is cheering, and all that's going on.
And then we'll talk to Brian about plans for the next season of America's Ninja Warrior on NBC coming up later this year. And if you have a question or comment for both Brian and Anthony, our remaining moments with them, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Friday on our program, we will have, from the brand-new HBO comedy Somebody Somewhere, the creators and executive producers Hannah Bott and Paul Thoreen. And from the movie Hollywood Priest, the producer, writer, director, Father Tom Gibbons, the subject, the great Paula's father, executive producer of the award-winning series Insight, one of the best anthology series in TV history, Father Elwood Kaiser. That's all coming up a week from today at our regular time, VPB's New Pacific right here on Tamavi Televised. Brian, when does your series go back in production, and do you know yet when NBC is going to premiere the next season?
Yeah, we're actually we're in production now. It's almost become a year-round thing now, which is rare in television, but it takes a while to get all our ducks in a row. We have a big footprint, so just to find locations, that process starts as soon as we finish the season before, because we have to find a place, whether that's, you know, now we're shooting a lot in big football-sized arenas, and those are obviously booked quite a bit ahead of time. There's a, you know, whether that's football teams or Garth Brooks concerts or conventions or those kinds of things. So those have to be reserved quite a bit ahead of time. And then we start with the casting and the sort of R&D for our obstacles. And we've been doing that for a couple of months now. We'll actually start shooting for this upcoming season in March and sort of shoot March, April, and May. But we're right now, we're already in our casting process for this year. I've got about 150 tapes on my laptop to watch this weekend.
You've done some special seasons. I know you've done at least one American Ninja Warriors Jr. Have you thought about perhaps doing a like Challenge of Champions kind of thing, where like the top all-time champions of your series get one more opportunity?
We have. We've thrown around. We do sort of specials at the end of the year that we've done for a while now. We do an All-Stars event. We've done a skills event, which is sort of a, you know, we supersize obstacles and it kind of make it like the NBA All-Star game. We started doing a women's championship, and then we this past season did a family championship. And this coming season, we're doing something new. We're going to have a couples special. So we put, you know, Ninja has brought a lot of people together. And so we're going to have a format where both the, you know, you and your boyfriend or you and your wife compete together on basically a two-man team and take on the course.
Anthony, how did you end up during your season, and would you take up the challenge again? And given the fact that your wife got you into this, if Brian decides we're going to do a you know, his and her husband and wife deal, get you both involved.
It's funny you ask that. So as he's talking, I'm getting this itch, and I'm like, oh, do I need to go put my name back in the hat? That's the first thought I had. I'm not against it. I think there's definitely a possibility to try it again. I still take care of myself, and I get down and train. I absolutely would love my wife to join me. My wife's in better shape than I am. She actually does track. She actually runs master's track and college track at the age of 38. But I can't get her to get over her fear of letting go of a bar and flying through the air. So if I ever get that past her, 100% we'd be in.
What guidance would you give, Anthony, to anybody who wants to try out for Brian's series?
Oh, I give this, actually. Do it. The cool thing that I think that they don't even really express, and we've talked a lot about, is, you know, the physical nature of it. You're missing, I think, the gold of this whole thing. It's about the connection of humanity within the stories that they extract. And anybody, anywhere in life that has something that they've been battling, struggling as a human, you're not alone. I think it's one part of it. And this is a place for you to go give your energy and excel in something where your difference and uniqueness and your struggle is celebrated. And anybody who is in a space of, like, wants to get the message of what you do out there that can help people through putting yourself on display of a physical competition, it's the place to try out. Put your name in the hat, man. They go through all of it painstakingly, and they curate such an amazing collection of humans. There's, you know, if you really think about it, there are hundreds of people that go every single, you know, city, and you only see a few of them on TV, but there's so many massive, amazing hearts to see, the staff, the producers, the team that's getting, even people that are, like, getting you ready to go on with obstacles, and then all the other ninjas. So if you want to have a really cool life experience, just being around something, definitely go apply to be in the show, because just like me, you're not giving up. I didn't think I could do it. I was a former football guy. We don't do well on the show, like Brian mentioned, but you never know what you're capable of until you try.
Brian, before we go, what are you and everybody involved most proud of with this series? and particularly in terms of how this series impacts people's lives and their self-esteem about what they can do in life.
Yeah, I think there's a story I've told it a few times about, you know, I'm a parent and I go to, you know, kids' birthday parties and, you know, working in unscripted television, some of the stuff that's out there, you're kind of like, oh, yeah, I work on, you know, and you almost don't want to say it out loud. And once I started working on this show, the difference, you know, you're at a kid's three-year-old birthday party and you kind of get into a conversation and you say, oh, yeah, I work on a show. Oh, yeah, what do you work on? It's American Ninja Warrior. And people's faces light up. And moms, you know, who would just go, oh, my God, that's our favorite show at our house. And then, you know, literally start to get tears in their eyes because they have such a connection to the show and what it's meant to them. And that's really rewarding as a producer who's, you know, worked on a lot of different shows to get that kind of response and know what it means to people. And when you're out there and when we're putting the show together and shooting and have, you know, ninjas come up to you and hug you and thank you. And, you know, they're so appreciative both that they were, you know, selected for the show. And then when the show comes out, a lot of them will, you know, they'll tell their neighbors and their friends and the kids at school and all these things to watch. And they send you, you know, thank you notes about, thank you so much for, you know, telling my story, for making me a hero to my kids, for all those kinds of things. And it's such a rewarding experience that you don't get in this business all that often.
The new season of America's Ninja Warrior coming up later this year on NBC. So check your local listings and your local NBC station for when that will be coming aboard. Or check NBC.com. Again, the new season of American Ninja Warrior coming up later this year on NBC. For more details, NBC.com. Brian Richardson, the executive producer, former contestant Anthony Trucks, thank you both very much for a wonderful half hour. It's been a pleasure to have both of you aboard. All the best for a great season ahead. Anthony, best of luck with whatever you're up to this year as well. Great Happy New Year to both. And Brian, please give our best to Matt. We enjoyed having him on last year. And let's have Matt and Akbar. If they're going to be doing Peacock stuff again, whether it's the Winter Olympics coming up next month, we'd love to have them back. They are a blast,
okay.
And so are you, both of you.
Thank you so much, and I will definitely tell the guys.
You got it. Brian,
thank
take
you as
care.
Well.
Anthony, take care. Both of you have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Brian Richardson joining us live from Los Angeles, and Anthony Trucks joining us live from Walnut Creek, California. Thanks to all of our guests for being here this 2-hour edition of Tomorrow Be Taller. Thank you for tuning in. Remember, coming up on Monday, we'll have key executives from Boat Rocker Media and Chicken Soup for the Soul Entertainment. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast tonight or throughout the weekend, available on the iRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, as well as Amazon Music, Verbal, and Reason. What do you think about today's program? What's your thoughts for where TV's at and where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. We do respond with what you have to say within 24 hours because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not say those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a free book or two and much more, audibletrial.com/televised. Website name is provided by onpodium.com, the internet's new podcast destination. For more, go to onpodium.com. Our web coordinator, guitarist Finkus. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic weekend. We're back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tuner Radio, and all of our podcast destinations. Whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe and make it great. If you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor, check up on your medical situation, and then make a great choice and make it your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.